This is Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another live session. And joining me today in the JPR studios, it's G Love. Welcome to Jefferson Public Radio, man. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, thanks for having us.
The new record is called Love Saves the Day. It is a special sauce record. You are here today sans sauce, just solo. Originally out of Philadelphia, right?
Yeah.
But you are now calling what home?
Calling Boston home.
Why Boston? Why did you end up there?
Well, I've lived there twice in my life. The first time I moved in 1992, I moved from Philadelphia to Boston to be a street performer. And then I met my band there. And we got a record deal and hit the road. And 5 years after that, I met a girl in Boston. And we fell in love and made a baby and moved to, we lived in Philadelphia. Things didn't work out, so she moved with my kid to Boston, so I moved to Boston. Family ties, baby.
So how does a kid from the middle of Philadelphia stumble upon the music of John Hammond?
Well, it was a good story. I played acoustic guitar from a young age, and from 8 years old. And when I was 15, I got a harmonica, and I started playing harmonica on the rack. And so, you know, there's not too many people that do it. So, of course, like, you know, I knew Bob Dylan and Neil Young. So as I started kind of searching deeper into music, I just went to a record store and I said, well, there's got to be someone. I said, do you know, is there anybody that plays solo acoustic guitar with the harmonica on the rack other than Bob Dylan or Neil Young? So he said, well, check out this John Hammond record. And I put that record on. It was his second record. It was called Country Blues. Man, I put that first side on, and it was his interpretation of Statesboro blues. And I didn't, you know, I didn't know what I was looking for or what I was going to get, but I knew the minute I heard that first, you know, four bars come on, oh, that's the sound that I was looking to get. So then I traced back from all his recordings to all the different players that he was getting his thing from, John Lee Hooker, Robert Johnson, Booker White, Sleepy John Estes and Lightning Hopkins and on and on.
So guitar came first, young kid. Harmonica came a little bit later on.
Yeah.
And then how long did it take before you started to go out and busk the streets of Philadelphia?
I grew up in Center City in Philadelphia. And so I grew up right near this street called South Street, right? And it was like a promenade street. And, you know, a lot of street performers. It's a lot of different walks of life. Like everybody was down there, you know. Yeah, I mean, there was a really vibrant street culture. Hip hop was just starting, and then there was, you know, people playing spoons, people playing drum circles. A dude with wine glasses. He would play Mozart on the wine glasses. Have you ever seen that? Puppeteers, magicians, everything, and folk singers. And so first, we started going out kind of as a joke. You know, we'd be smoke a joint or whatever in high school and say, oh, let's go get the guitars and go sit on the corner. And then, you know, we made like $20. $20 was a pretty good amount of money for a kid who, you know, if you're 16 years old in 1986, all right, that's cool. So then I just started doing it. And then, you know, and then my thing was always like, look, man, you want to go just drink beer at some keg party in the woods, or you want to go out and make some money and play some music? Well, I'll be on the corner.
So on the spectrum of all the people out there on the street, from the guy playing the wine glasses to the rock bands, the hip hop guys, where were you on the spectrum at the time of awesome and maybe forgettable?
I mean, I was just a kid, you know. I was, but I don't know. I feel like I always had something special, or you know, we had a crazy group of friends. And I mean, I don't think it would be forgettable at all.
And then you end up moving to Boston and you're playing on the street in Harvard Square.
Yeah,
that's like the Carnegie Hall of busking,
right?
Like that is the
really
place
is
to be.
Yeah.
How was it different than when you were in Philly playing on the streets?
Man, it was like a whole different world. You know, for one thing, and the reason I went to Boston was because you can get a permit, right? In Philly, you would get chased off by the cops frequently, and which is basically just telling them, what do you beat it? But in Boston, you have a permit. So you pay $25 a year. You have a little neon green permit that goes in your guitar case. So it's like a big profession for a lot of people up there. And guys took it to the whole nother level. Like, you'd have guys with a couple car batteries powering a Bose PA.
Wow.
You know? And I had, like, this one PV battery-powered amp that held, like, you know, 6D batteries, you know? And a microphone and everything was going into this one amp. And, you know, it put out a little juice, but... And then on top of that, I was playing this weird type of music, and I was super raw, and, you know, I wasn't playing covers. I was either playing, like, really obscure old blues stuff or my own form of blues. So I was not making... In Philadelphia, I make at least 20 to 60 bucks every time I set it. In Harvard Square, I'd be make $5 to $12 a day for, like, you know, 2 to 8 hours on the street. And then on top of that, it was super competitive. I remember this one time... I go, and there was this place called The Coop, and it was a prime real estate, because you have to have prime real estate to get the most passersby, to get the most loot. This one place was called The Coop. So one day I came out, and no one was there, and I said, oh, I'm going to sit in The Coop. Perfect. It's my first time on the big stage at The Coop. And so no one would ever watch me play. Now, there's cool-looking kids watching me play. I said, oh, that's cool, man. I finished my song. Hey, thanks for coming out, man. What do you think? He said, you're in Mary Lou Lord's spot, man. She's coming out right now. You have to leave. But, like, dudes would pull a knife. I heard stories like this one dude would pull a knife on some people if they were in his spot, you know?
Man.
So the real estate was definitely premium.
G Love is my guest live today on Jefferson Public Radio. The new record with Special Sauce is called Love Saves the Day. Philadelphonic.com is the web address to find out more about the record, the band, and G Love. He's live in our studio with a Gretsch acoustic. What do you want to play first?
Well, we're talking about Boston, and this is a song I wrote about Boston. I-95, baby. I'm going back to Boston, think I'm losing my mind. I'm going back to Boston, driving I-95. But I know your girl, she ain't no friend of mine. Oh no, baby. Boston cold, man, the women wear too much clothes. All them Boston girls, they always gotta stay at home. On when that sun is shining, got a lot of ladies show. Show it, baby. Well, I'm a good man. I need a good woman, too. I'm a real good man. I need a good woman, too. Oh, now that New York girl, she ain't doing nothing but give me the blues. Blues. Well, we was to be married in the spring. Oh, man, gave her my diamond ring. Oh, now she changed her mind, she do it her own thing. Now do your thing, baby, like this. Aha. I like it when you do your thing. I just wish you'd do your thing with me one of these old times. Woo-wee. Now come on back home, baby. You know what? I could treat you right, honey. Now Boston winter, they so long and rough. And all the Boston girls, they gotta stay all covered up. When it's summertime, they sure looking good enough. Whoa, looking for a woman that's looking for a worried man. Oh, looking for a woman that's looking for a worried man. Oh, see that girl out there, she ain't trying to never understand. I'm going back to Boston, think I'm losing my mind. Oh, back to Boston, driving on 95. I find a fine looking woman. Ooh, she gonna help me ease my mind. Oh, yeah, baby.
That is G-Love live today on Jefferson Public Radio. The new record with Special Sauce is called Love Saves the Day. Information at philadelphonic.com. You and your band were dubbed long ago the pioneers, or one of the pioneers of hip-hop blues. No,
the pioneer.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
Yeah? You embrace that entirely? Where did the hip-hop...
Can I say yeah on radio?
We'll bleep it out. You can say it again, and we'll still bleep.
Fuck yeah, man.
Where did the hip-hop influence come from, that, and how did you figure out how to pair it with blues?
You know, it just kind of happened, really. It was like, you know, like I said, I grew up playing folk guitar, you know, acoustic guitar. And this was... I probably started playing guitar in 1980 when I was like 8. And then by the time it was 1984 or 5, it started sounding good. And then I was like, all right, cool. And then I started writing tunes. So, and then I told you how I got into the blues. So I kind of went from the Beatles, Bob Dylan, and into the Delta Blues thing. And also, I was also really into Velvet Underground. Now, that was the kid that was sitting in his room practicing guitar, right? And then the other part of me was just a kid growing up in Philly, and you know, so we were, it was the 80s, you know, our generation was the first kids listening to hip-hop and living in that culture. So we were, you know, all the kids in Philly, like, first we played basketball, and then we would break dance, and then we wrote graffiti, and then we skateboarded, and all this kind of like inner city culture stuff, and we listened to hip-hop. So I might be home practicing how to sing, you know, If I Had a Hammer by Peter, Paul, and Mary, but then I'd be like out with my friends, like writing graffiti, you know, listening to License to Ill, you know, all night long. And so hip hop was a big part of growing up. And you never thought of yourself as a white kid that you could rap. Cause I remember a time I had this basketball league I was in, and my buddy came over, he said, "Hey, yo, Garrett, listen to..." He put his headphones on my head, and he played the Beastie Boys, you know, "Hold It Now, Hold It Now, Hit It." And that's the first time I heard the Beastie Boys, and he goes, "What do you think?" I was like, "Yeah, that's cool, man." He goes, "Yeah, well, they're white, just like you." I was like, "No, they're not. They can't be white, they're rapping." He's like, "No, they're white." I was like, "Really?" And yeah, I think they kind of opened up a lot of opportunity for white people to rap. But yeah, no, but I mean, honestly, you never thought about yourself really rapping, although you knew every word of every hip-hop tune. So it really just happened one night. I was on the street in Philadelphia, and I was settling on this blues groove, and I started rapping the lyrics for Eric B. and Rakim over it. And then I knew right then, I was like, I had something. It was a big epiphany I'll never forget.
I guess it's convenient that you could repurpose all of the D-cell batteries from the boombox into your... battery-powered amplifier when you start busking, right? You just take the batteries out and move them over. Tell me about how the band formed. You said you met these guys in Boston, right?
Yeah.
Did you know immediately that it was going to work out musically?
No, it was one of those things, like, I thought in high school I had a great group of guys that I played with, but it was just like a work ethic and a focus thing to try and get, you know, teenagers to really focus in. But I knew we could have had something special. And then I went to college for a year, and I went to Skidmore College in Saratoga Springs, New York, and man, there were such amazingly talented musicians there, but they were all doing this like 70s technical groove thing, like a Stevie Wonder thing and Steely Dan kind of vibe. Really great players, but it really had nothing to do with what I was doing. I was doing something that was kind of primitive and more lyrically oriented, so I couldn't attract like good players, which is a good thing, because if I would have got a good band to college, I probably would have stayed and I wouldn't be here right now. So when I met my band, I met my drummer first, and he was in a lot of ways the perfect match for me, because see, now he was a blues drummer and a funk drummer and a jazz drummer, and so he immediately recognized the Delta Blues in my playing, and I would play him like a lot of hip-hop records, like I'd play him Tribe Called Quest or anything, and you know, Gangstar, and he'd be like, "Oh, well, that's a Meter sample." And I'm like, "Oh, really?" Because he knew all
yeah.
the references. So he could immediately latch on to the hip-hop side of what I was doing, even though it wasn't his generation, right? And then Jimmy Jazz, our bass player, he was a jazz, aspiring jazz guy, but not really technical enough ever to really make it in a true jazz world, but he was rooted in like rock and roll. You know the band The Motet?
Yep.
Well,
yep.
Dave Watts, the drummer of that, is a very, very old friend, and Jim and him used to be roommates. So they had this whole scene in Boston, this tripped out, you know, jamming scene at his house called Neptune. So Jim had this like jam sensibility. He understood what I was doing. So we tried out a lot of upright players, but Jim actually, a lot of upright players were like too sophisticated for what we were doing.
So you didn't have to hard sell either one of them on the concept of hip-hop blues?
Well, the thing about it was there was no concept. It just, like I said, it just kind of happened. Like, I mean, hip-hop blues is a term that I coined like years and years and years and years later. At the time, it was just like, we just do what we do, which is basically like a garage band that's influenced by hip-hop. But when we came out, you know, no one was really doing hip-hop. As a matter of fact, I remember we're making our first demos, which turned into our first record, and our producer came back one day and goes, "Oh, man, got bad news." "What happened, Dave?" "Well, I went out to L.A. to take some meetings for you guys, and, well, Columbia's getting raided. There's another white boy who plays guitar and raps." "Who?" "I don't know, some guy named Beck. But Columbia's choosing him over you." But it doesn't matter. You know, we got our own deal with Epic Records, but yeah. The difference between Beck and I was that, see, Beck's record was all loops and everything, you know? And it was, I mean, not taking anything away from him. Obviously, tremendous artist. But our thing was something different. It was like a band. It was like, it was real playing, no loops, not production. It was just meant to be in the spirit of the great blues artist that we grew up listening to.
G Love is my guest today on Jefferson Public Radio. The new record just out with Special Sauce is called Love Saves the Day. Information at his website, philadelphonic.com. Want to play another?
Yeah.
What's up next?
On this song called Little Runaround. Run around, baby. Everywhere I go, I see one of your old time used to be. I used to have so many friends all around the world, baby. Now I gotta watch my back every step I take, cause the way you run, yeah, you little run around. You didn't want but you don't stop doing baby, 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 things you do. You got so many men, your so-called friend. You ain't trying to make no time for me. You been making plenty of time for them. I ain't always done the right thing, baby. I sure ain't no saint. But there's something I could take back, something I can't. You little run around, you did one but you don't stop doing bad, 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 bad things you. Now my friend, they all say, don't let that woman waste your time. She gonna ruin you, man. Break your heart and break your mind. But see, I don't care what they say. Oh, they ain't never gonna understand. I was put on the earth to love you, baby, and loving you who I am. You little run around. You didn't want but you. Won't stop doing it. Bad, 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 bad good things you do.
That is G Love live today on Jefferson Public Radio. The new record is called Love Saves the Day. Information at philadelphonic.com. All right, so this new one is a new special sauce record.
Yep.
There have been a handful of just G Love records. Mm-hmm. What do the G Love and special sauce records let you do that you can't do on one of your solo records?
I mean, honestly, they're pretty much the same thing. It's just that sometimes I think it sounds better, depending on the title of the record, to call it G Love or G Love and Special Sauce. Really. If you look under personnel, there's usually at least one of those guys on the record. Well, like the Fixin' to Die record, that was more of a solo record. You know, the Avett Brothers produced that, and I wanted to go into their world with their band. Although halfway through the session, I did bring Jeff, my drummer, in, because we had a relatively short amount of days, like two or three, to cut all these tracks. And it was just like Jeff and I, he knows all the tunes that I've had throughout my whole career. So I brought him in. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think there's never any kind of thing of those guys holding me back or me holding them back or anything. But yeah, it is good to play with different, a variety of musicians, because, you know, I do relate being in a band to being in a marriage. But of course, if you are married and you fool around with some other chick, then you're gonna get booted out. But if you're in a band and you go jam with a ton of other slut yourself musically around town, they can't really say anything.
I'm gonna let that go by, but I do want to point out that you did collaborate with a fair number of people on the new records. All kinds of folks on here. Lucinda Williams is on here. David Hidalgo is on here. How did you pick who you picked, and where did the idea come from to bring in all these special guests?
So we had taken a hiatus from being with Jim in the unit for about 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years. And so we brought back Jim for the recording of the Sugar record, which was our first trio record we had made in a while. And that record was so creatively successful, and just reconnecting with the original trio, that energy, that chemistry, it was like, oh yeah. So now the label came to us and they said, do you want to make another record? And we said, okay, let's make a record. So we kind of were in crunch time, because it was a little quick after our Sugar record to go ahead and make Love Saves the Day. We wrote a lot as a band, which more than we'd ever done. So then we said, well, let's make this record different than a Sugar record, so let's bring in some guests. So we brought in, yeah, like you just said, David Hidalgo, Citizen Cope, Ozzy Motley, Christy Lee, DJ Logic.
That's already a pretty wide assortment of people.
Yeah.
I mean, all over the musical gamut.
And we had 6 days to get all these people in, so every day was like a whole different journey, you know, of different vibes that everyone would bring to the studio. And it was awesome, man, because everybody, I feel like, all the guests really got their personalities and their playing and their soul on that record.
That turned out great. New record is fantastic. We talked about the Gretsch that you brought in to play today. What else are you playing these days?
I guess my main acoustic is a Gibson J45. And then I also, on my solo show, I also use a National Tricone Resonator for my slide guitar stuff. And I use a Gibson 185 12 string. And then my rig on a G11 Special Sauce, I have a Signature Series guitar with Eastwood Guitars, which is the 59-3 pickup airline guitar, which is a really slick-looking guitar. And also use a 70 Les Paul, which is probably my one I play most on this tour. And then I have a couple other Gretches that I use for electric ones. I use a Black Falcon, and I use a 60th Anniversary Hollow Body for my slide guitar stuff.
So this new record you took to, Pledge Music?
Yeah.
And a lot of folks are doing that these days,
yeah,
but not a lot of them are offering up, I'll make you dinner if you support the record. You were making dinner for one of your fans coming
up,
right?
Tomorrow, one of the things that we offer was Cooking with G. I'll come to your house.
It's like a new public television show, Cooking with G.
Yeah, well, actually, on our third record, yeah, it's that easy. There's remember we have the DVD. Remember those DVDs?
Yeah.
DVD extra, Cooking with G. So we've been, It's been a long time dream to have a cooking show. We haven't quite attained that one yet. But anyways, the Cooking with G. Yeah, so I'm going to go to these people's house, and I'm going to jam a couple tunes and, you know, hang out, make dinner, you know, just kick it.
That's barbecue. Awesome.
But they don't have a grill. I said, you live in Seattle and you don't have, do you live in an apartment building? No. Well, why the hell don't you have a grill? So we got to go buy a grill because I'm going to make a couple of my famous beer can chickens.
That's super cool. That's super cool. Before I let you go, I want to ask about the art and the drawing that you do too, because this has become a little bit more well known, a little bit more prominent in what you do. You've been drawing posters for concerts. What other kinds of things you work on?
I mostly do set lists. I started, I mean, I've always, you know, because I, you know, like I said earlier, like I used to write graffiti a little bit. Now, I was never very good, but that stays with you because you're always practicing your tag, you know? And then when you get to become a rock star, then you get to sign your tag all over people's shirts and everything. So, you know, you keep at it. But, so yes, I do these like hand drawn set lists. And then I also, you know, I sit in a chair when I play. So I started like painting my chairs and everything like that. And then I also like go to a thrift store and get like a old, you know, painting and then paint over and stuff. I'm no Picasso, but like I really like art is a big part of my world, my personal world. Like I really am interested in the visual arts, and I'm a collector, and you know, I do put a lot of time and money into, like, if I go, every year started out, there's this wonderful art fair in Miami called Art Basel, and I go down there every year and I play a bunch of acoustic gigs, and then whatever gig money I get, I go buy some art, right? So I've been doing that for, you know, 7 years now, and so my collection's really grown. And as you know, you get into that world, and I don't know what it is, but like sometimes for me, when I look at a piece of visual art that really connects with me, I don't know. I mean, it really just turns me on. Like it's like that grape. Hubba Bubba gum from back in the day, like you're chewing it, but you want to eat it. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
like
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know what I mean? It's kind of like that with art. Like it's like, it's probably like that with music too, but something that just hits you in just such a way you just want to like absorb it, you know? You know, so that's how I feel about art. And yeah, so I do a little bit on the side.
Are you selling any of that stuff, or is it just
Yeah, we sell, like every night I make a hand-drawn set list, and it's just kind of a way for me to zone in on what I'm going to be doing on stage that night and shake out the nerves a little bit. And anyhow, so I always copy them, and we throw out Xeroxes. We always kept the originals, and one guy said, a buddy of mine who had a gallery, said, hey, you want to do an art show? Okay. Are you sure? That's weird. All right, I'll do it. So we did it, and we sold a bunch of stuff. And so now actually so every night now we frame the original one. We hand out the copies to the crowd, but then the original one is for sale in the back. So that's the first tour we're doing that. So, yeah, I think it's cool. And I think, you know, people, for our fans that have been coming to see us for over to so many years, it's something special for them. And,
yeah,
for sure. It definitely has a lot of love in it, you know.
G Love is my guest live today on Jefferson Public Radio. His new record with Special Sauce is called Love Saves the Day. Information at philadelphonic.com. Thanks for coming in, man. This has been great.
Yeah, my pleasure.
You got one more tune for us?
Yeah. This song that I'll do with Mr. Citizen Cope. It's called Muse.
Talking about the fire like a subject thing have to be taken in context. Everything that you hear ain't real fact, but I don't wanna believe that. I just wanna follow. That the road is death when you make the decision that you regret. Man, biggest mystery when it's all said have remained for the ages unanswered. I just wanna follow.
That is G-Love live in the JPR studios today. A tune from the new record with Special Sauce called Love Saves the Day. Information online at philadelphonic.com. G-Love, thanks again for coming by.
Thanks. It's a real pleasure. And
come back.
Great to be in Oregon.
Come back and visit us again.
I sure will.